Greetings once again, America. You may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview right here from the underground studios of theweeklyworldview.com. This is the show where we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought, and we're so glad to have you back. As we dive in to another week's worth of events and look forward to the week coming up, I've got to tell you, I'm not firing on all cylinders today, so you'll have to bear with me and my extremely attractive audio engineer, because we have a sick child in the house, yes, and she's pretty much been given the run of the place, including the studio, if she chooses to show up. So you may hear her come down here and sniffle and pout a little bit in the background. And if my audio engineer has to go and attend to the young child, I'll be left here on my own, without a net, to my own devices, to try to do the show all by myself with no audience. But by the way, the audience is growing by leaps and bounds.
Good.
Last time I checked, we were up to 11 listeners.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 11 listeners, so we are happening. I tell you what. Now, I don't know, I'm not sure where I want to start this week. I suppose the big news of the week, of course, has been the G20 meeting. I wasn't aware that there was a G20. I remember there was a G7, and then there was a G8, and now there's a G20. You know, it's like the national debt, you know? A week ago it was 7 or 8, and now it's 20. I don't know what's going on. What does that stand for anyway? Hey, the G20, wasn't that a Pontiac? Can someone correct me if I'm wrong? I think that was a Pontiac. And now that the government owns General Motors, maybe they're doing a little bit of cross-marketing there, something like that, trying to help out our friends there at General Motors. What do you think the G20 stands for? Is it the Global 20? Maybe. I don't. Maybe it's the Gay 20. They all seem to love homos. The Gay 20? Anyway, I'm not sure what it stands for or what it's all about, but it was a big story this week. In fact, a little later in the broadcast, we will have actual audio of Barry Ho addressing some folks there at the G20. It'll be actual audio of my impression of Barry Ho giving a speech at the G20, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. This guy is tough to impersonate because, as I've said before, he's so vacuous and empty that it's very difficult to hang a good impression on it. But I've been working on it. And we'll get to that a little later in the show. I think I'll start with an update on a story that we covered a bit last week, the war next door, the Mexican drug wars that are going on. This was from earlier in the week in Mexico City, a Reuters story. Mexican police captured a drug baron from the northern border city of Ciudad Juarez, the country's most violent place, in a turf war among trafficking gangs that killed 6,300 people last year. Vicente Carrillo Leiva, 32-year-old leader of the Juarez cartel, was seized while jogging in a park in an upscale residential district of Mexico City, according to Mexican police. He was, conveniently enough, presented to the media wearing a white tracksuit. Sure, he's like the... He's like the anti-Blagojevich. He wears a white tracksuit. Anyway, he was presented to the media wearing a white tracksuit shortly before U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Big Jim Napolitano and Attorney General Eric Holder arrived for talks with the Mexican government. They're discussing plans for tougher border controls to stop U.S. weapons from reaching Mexican drug gangs. The U.S. Embassy in Mexico is quoted in the article as saying, "His capture marks another significant victory for Mexican law enforcement." And ladies and gentlemen, in all reality, his capture really marks a photo op for which, thankfully, Big Jim Napolitano was not present. So we didn't have to see his ugly mug. But they just dress this up. They capture the guy, put him in front of the cameras. Oh, we're doing a lot to fight the drug war. In the meantime, they won't start executing drug dealers, which is what is necessary to win the drug war, the war next door, as our man A.C. Cooper likes to call it. But anyway, just another photo op, and the drugs continue to flow into the United States of America, where the public schools prepare consumers for the drug dealers that the government refuses to execute. All right, so that war continues, and meanwhile, out at the big G20 meeting, the Gay 20 meeting, a WorldNet Daily article from earlier in the week, President Obama, that'd be Barry Ho, apparently greeted the King of Saudi Arabia with a full bow from the waist. Yes, the situation developed as leaders of the world attending the G20 summit in London assembled for a photograph to mark the event. And they had pictures of it on WorldNet Daily. And Barry Ho walks up to the King of Saudi Arabia and bows, like, right to the guy's waist. I was waiting for the king to stick out his ring and for Barry Ho to kiss it or something. It was just disturbing. Is Barry aware that he's been elected the president of the United States of America? That he is the leader of the most powerful nation on the planet? And that bowing to some third world backward king in Saudi Arabia is just outside of protocol, Barry. Come on now, grow up, Barry. You're the president, for crying out loud. You don't have to bow to the King of Saudi Arabia. Unbelievable. It's just depressing. It's depressing. Our president bows to the King of Saudi Arabia. That guy looks freaky, too.
Did he give iPod?
Oh, no, we don't know. I don't think he gave him an iPod. He may have. All right. Now, on to the big story of the week. Now, this is the big story of the week. From the BBC, apparently, the headline reads, Earth population exceeds limits. And the BBC article says, there are already too many people living on planet Earth, according to one of the most influential science advisors in the U.S. government. Big shock there, right? Nina Fedorov told the BBC One Planet program that humans had exceeded the Earth's, quote, limits of sustainability, unquote. Dr. Fedorov has been the science and technology advisor to the U.S. Secretary of State since 2007, initially working with Condoleezza Rice. Now, under the new Obama administration, she now advises Hillary Rodham Clinton. So, there you go. So further evidence that we've simply made the transition from a moderately socialist government under the Republicans and George W. Bush to a full-blown globalist Marxist government here with the Barry Ho administration with Hillary Rodham Clinton as our esteemed Secretary of State. Now, Dr. Fedorov, that's Nina Fedorov, she says, quote, we need to continue to decrease the growth rate of the global population. The planet can't support many more people. That's what she said. And pressed on whether she thought the world's population was simply too high, Dr. Fedorov replied, there probably are already too many people on the planet. Now, I believe Hillary could advise her, could advise the good doctor on how to deal with, you know, problem people. I don't know. Fort Marcy Park is only so big. I'm not sure how much help she could give her, but they are certainly of the same mind. I'm sure of that. So I'm sure that Dr. Nina Fedorov is getting along quite handsomely with Hillary Rodham Clinton up there at the completely deluded and drugged-out, whacked-out State Department. These people are certifiably insane. In fact, there's a story that I want to get to. Here we go. Another. Remember, I think it was last week that I called for drug tests for all governing officials. And I'm not the first person to do that. But it's something that needs to be looked at. Dateline Washington, D.C. from the Agence France-Presse. U.S. Envoy Scott Gratian heads for Sudan this week as President Barack Obama turns up the heat on his Sudanese counterpart, Omar al-Bashir, to allow aid groups back into war-torn Darfur. Now, you're all familiar with the Darfur story. It's a criminal story. a story of epic proportion, murder and bloodletting of epic proportion going on there in Darfur. But I want to first criticize the Agence France-Presse for calling the Sudanese dictator Omar al-Bashir President Barack Obama's counterpart. You know, I've noticed this with these global news agencies. They tend to present these tin horn dictators as if they're somehow on equal footing with the President of the United States of America. And as much as I dislike Barry Ho, and as much as I detest his policies, his philosophy, his worldview, his wife's hips. No, we're going to leave that out. Should we edit that out? We don't want to make fun. Have you guys noticed that everyone seems to give a pass to this lady? I mean, she looks like she's been hit in the face with a frying pan, and her hips look like a U-Haul trailer. I mean, come on. So what? She's got skinny arms. Big deal. And, all right, now I digress. And maybe we'll just edit all that out, because I don't necessarily like making fun of the way people look, but it just seems a bit hypocritical to me that the news media is treating this woman as if she's some sort of fashion plate, when the clothes she wears, I mean, they're just bizarre. Am I the only one who notices this? Maybe I'm the only one. Maybe it's me. Maybe I have a problem. I've never been very hip when it comes to fashion, and so maybe it's just me. Anyway, I think she's ugly, all right? That's all. All right, that's all. I think she's ugly. All right. Now, so the Agence France-Presse presents Sudanese dictator Omar al-Bashir as the counterpart of the President of the United States. You know, whether it was Barry Ho or whoever it was, George W. Bush, George Washington, you know, Bashir is there, his counterpart. Yeah, right. The guy's a murderous dictator. And, of course, the reporters there in France, they've become so fair and balanced that they consider a dictator the counterpart of the president, freely elected president of the United States of America. But anyway, now here's where we get into the drug tests that are needed for the State Department. Jerry Fowler, who's the president of the Save Darfur Coalition, echoes State Department hopes in his thinking. He hopes that the Obama administration, which boasts a multilateral approach to foreign policy, will recruit the governments of Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, South Africa, Nigeria, and Uganda to get Bashir to change course. Now, what Bashir is doing, ladies and gentlemen, which you will not learn from reading this or any other recent article produced on the Darfur humanitarian crime, is Bashir is funding Muslim militias to go and randomly, and not so randomly, slaughter, kill, and terrorize Christians. And there's some other religion down there, and I forget what they are, but basically the Christian minority, along with some other third-rate religions that are not Muslim, are basically being slaughtered, displaced, murdered, raped, and terrorized by Muslim militias. Now, if you read all the articles on Darfur, all they talk about is it's a humanitarian crisis, it's a tragedy, but they never explain what exactly is going on. Muslims are slaughtering non-Muslims, and they're also slaughtering Muslims who aren't sufficiently Muslim enough for the Muslim fanatics who are in these militias and who are being funded, encouraged, organized by Bashir and his Muslim government. Now, so we understand from the article, though, that the State Department has hopes that countries like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, South Africa, Nigeria, and Uganda will help to convince Mr. Bashir, the counterpart of George Washington, to stop slaughtering all of the minority populations there in his country. Well, on the other hand, Arab leaders, they wrapped up their annual summit late Monday this past week in Doha, wherever that is, Doha, and they united firmly behind Bashir against his arrest warrant over Darfur, issued by the International Criminal Court, and they said, quote, as a group, they released a statement, quote, "We stress our solidarity with Sudan and our rejection of the ICC decision against President Omar al-Bashir." So the folks at the State Department are either they're on drugs Or they're just incredibly stupid and deluded and naive, and they think that these other countries are going to help with the Darfur situation. There's only one thing that's going to help with the Darfur situation, and that is Christians going to Darfur and saving the Christian minority of Darfur by armed force if necessary. That's the only thing, because that's the only way that you can defeat Muslim fanatics hell-bent on destroying everything non-Muslim. So the folks at the State Department, drug tests are the least of it. I mean, there needs to be some serious house cleaning up at the Department of State. And I just don't know that Hillary's the man for the job. I just don't know that. But I suppose we'll find out. Okay, now, I talked a few weeks ago about this exciting possibility up in North Korea that they were going to launch a rocket, and the Japanese apparently had the means to shoot it down, but apparently they didn't have the nerve, because the North Koreans launched the rocket. Liftoff took place this week, and listen to this, folks. The rocket launched from North Korea reached Japanese airspace within 7 minutes, and warships did not activate interceptors because no debris appeared to hit its territory, and that's just unfortunate. It is really unfortunate. And have you heard this, folks? While all this controversy over the rocket launch has been going on, North Korea announced last week that it would put two American reporters detained at the border with China on trial for allegedly entering the country illegally and engaging in what they're calling hostile acts. Yes, Laura Ling and Yuna Lee, who are reporters from American television, were seized by North Korean soldiers on March 17th. So Korea continues to thumb its nose at not only Barry Ho and Hillary over there at the State Department, but at the entire world. And apparently China's just going to let them continue to do that. And the Japanese and the Americans based there in the Pacific just didn't have the stones to shoot this thing down. I mean, who would have argued with us? If we would have shot it down, we could have just said, look, we thought it might be going somewhere where we didn't want it to go, so we decided to shoot it down. We've missed a tremendous opportunity to test our missile defense capabilities, and I am frankly very disappointed. Very disappointed. And the world is not a safe place, ladies and gentlemen. This week, Benjamin Netanyahu over in Israel, he said that... Well, according to an article I read in the Jerusalem Post, he says the primary imperative for the United States and President Barack Obama, a.k.a. Barry Ho, is to put an end to Iran's nuclear race. He said that right before he was sworn in, and he added that if the U.S. failed to do so, Israel might be forced to resort to a military strike on the Islamic Republic, on the Islamic Republic's nuclear installations. And I just got to say, Benjamin, don't get my hopes up, man. Come on. I got all excited when the Japanese broke out the Aegis cruisers and the missile defense there. And now, you know, you're getting me all worked up over this. And, you know, frankly, from what I've seen you folks do over the last couple of years, I have not been that impressed, okay? And I'm not so sure that even the Israelis have the stones anymore to do what needs to be done to secure domestic tranquility across the globe. It's just depressing. All right. A Dateline, Pikeville, North Carolina. This is from the Joe Biden Watch. Yeah, the Joe Biden Watch. As I've said on a number of occasions, Joe Biden is a reliable fountain of stupidity for everyone in conservative talk radio. This week, Joe Biden and U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced a new wave of $10.4 billion in federal stimulus money for home loans across the country, and billions more for essential services in rural communities such as Pikeville, which is getting money for a new fire station. Isn't that wonderful, boys and girls? Now, Biden used the outdated fire station there in Pikeville as a backdrop for his speech, but most of the money for the station that Biden announced on Wednesday, most of that money had been secured last year under the Bush administration. So the story proves two things. Number one, Joe Biden is an idiot. Number two, George Bush was a socialist. It's the Weekly Worldview with Doug McBurney, your humble host, here at the studios of theweeklyworldview.com, following the tragic unfolding of human history right before our eyes, but trying to have a little fun while we're doing it. And speaking of that, we're going to give this a try. This may or may not work. And I will let you know right now that I will be using a teleprompter. Barry Ho gave a number of speeches this week before the Gay 20. And we have an excerpt from one of them in which Barry is encouraging his counterparts there, his fellow global leaders, to coordinate their actions, focus on common ground, all that good stuff that we did back in the student council. You remember that? Well, so Barry gave a speech, and we have a brief excerpt from that speech. Barry, take it away. We have a responsibility to coordinate our actions and focus on common ground, not our occasional differences. Look, we're all believers here. We believe in global governance, higher taxes, socialism as we're able to obtain it, and one day, that purest form of Marxism to which we all aspire. It is we who have attained knowledge that those who still cling to their Bibles and their guns must come to know, to accept, yes, to bow down. We find common ground in our hatred of God and the intolerance he represents. We believe in killing babies and rehabilitating murderers, in teaching our children that they're animals from the cosmic slime. We believe our children are our future, and that the sooner we can begin taxing them, the sooner this current crisis will pass. And above all, we are dedicated to liberating our homosexual brothers and sisters. And by that, excuse me, my teleprompter has stopped. Bear with me one moment. And by that, ladies and gentlemen, I mean to include the transgender and those of indeterminate gender and those who choose to identify with no gender and or other as yet undefined gender. And if I've forgotten anyone, I apologize, and I ask that you forgive me and remember that while I may be a minority, I am still only heterosexual, for none of us can be perfect. Let us now focus together on the work ahead to advance the principles we agree on, stealing, lying, adultery, and murder. And together, we will secure for our fellow citizens of the world the rewards for all our works. Thank you, and God bless you all. All right, so that was my attempt at getting into the deep into the heart and the mind of your president and mine, Barry Ho, out there at the Gay 20 meeting. And, you know, the guy's hard to do, okay? And I'll keep working on it, but I think we captured the essence of who the man is, even if maybe the impression itself did not rise to the level of other impressions that have graced these airwaves in the past. Well, there you have it. So the Gay 20 meeting is going on, and meanwhile, back at the ranch, Dateline Seattle, Washington, from the Associated Press, a program that gives homeless alcoholics a place to live and drink is saving taxpayers more than $4 million a year, according to a study that was released this week. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and it endorses what they call a housing first approach that calls for putting homeless people in permanent homes with supportive services instead of requiring them to stop drinking and taking drugs in order to earn their shelter. You know, like you and me, you know, we have to stop drinking and doing drugs or we'll end up losing our house, end up on the street like a bum. But if you're already a bum and a loser, well, the folks in Seattle will give you a place to live. It's a bit topsy-turvy if you ask me, but the University of Washington, they had a study, and they followed 95 chronic alcoholics before and after they moved into an apartment building in downtown Seattle. Researchers who were not affiliated. What a fun job that must be. Can you imagine following chronic 95 chronic alcoholics? I mean, the notes involved with this trial, this study, must be quite an interesting read. To imagine what the folks following this group of chronic alcoholics, which we used to call bums, we used to call them losers, we used to call them hobos, derelicts. Well, now they're chronic alcoholics. Anyway, the researchers, who were not affiliated with the program, found the average monthly cost on taxpayers when a chronic alcoholic, bum, degenerate, loser lived on the streets, it was costing taxpayers almost $5,000 a month. Now, I'm not sure. I suppose that's all related back to emergency room visits and, you know, you have to put them up in jail for a night or two, pump their stomach. I'm sure that these folks, but I mean, $5,000 a month, for crying out loud, that's more than a lot of people make every month. And that's what your average bum costs the taxpayers there in Seattle. That's wild. Well, 6 months, according to the study, 6 months after residents moved into supported housing, those costs dropped to just around $1,500 per person per month. So if you give a bum a house, he ends up less of a burden on the general tax-paying society, apparently. At least that's the short-term data that we're able to observe from this story out of Seattle. A program to house... This is just sad. This idea in Seattle to give bums houses is based on a program that houses homeless Native Americans who have chronic drinking problems there in Minneapolis. And so apparently there is already some do-gooders out there who are, well, they're not just happy. They're not happy at all to see bums, derelicts, hobos, drunks. I think we used to call them drunks. They're not happy seeing them dying in the streets and tripping over them and all that. And so they're giving them homes now. Similar projects were being considered in New York, Atlanta, Fort Worth, Phoenix, and Los Angeles, where there, I'm sure, in those cities, as here in beautiful Denver, Colorado, I'm certain that there is a good supply of derelicts, hobos, bums, and drunks. And now they're going to give them houses, and they'll feel better that the bums drink themselves to death in state-funded housing. And I'm not sure why that makes anyone feel better, but I suppose it does. And what was the point of doing this story? I really don't know. I guess it's just an example of liberalism run amok and feel-goodism that just really isn't helping anyone. Let's see. I don't want to talk about the banks anymore. That's really getting old. You know, there's a lot of banks out there trying to return the TARP money. And apparently Barry Ho won't take it back. Because how's he going to be able to fire their CEOs and control the pay of their executives if he gives the money back? Now all these bankers who got this money back when they were telling us that, oh, if the banks collapse, the whole world is going to end and, you know, we're all going to be standing in soup lines and drinking our own urine and it's going to be horrible, horrible. We need the money. And now that they realize that they've basically made a deal with the devil, now they want to give the money back, and the devil's saying, no, 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 no. I got you, soul. I'm your soul brother. Barry Ho. All right. Now, from the Domestic Tranquility File, and I'm going to go through these quickly, ladies and gentlemen, because there are so many of them that if I took the time to go through each story and give it the attention to detail that it deserves, we would be here until Judgment Day, literally. Dateline. Carthage, North Carolina, a nurse's assistant, this is the Domestic Tranquility File, ladies and gentlemen, Dateline, Carthage, North Carolina, a nurse's assistant whose estranged husband is accused of fatally shooting 8 people at the nursing home where she worked, had recently left him. Do you guys remember that story? Do you remember the story? Now, go back in your memory banks. This guy walked into a nursing home full of old people and opened fire and started shooting and killing people. But you barely remember it, don't you? You barely remember it because there's been several other stories just like that have supplanted it just during this news cycle. Dateline Santa Clara, California. The man who gunned down his 2 children and 3 other relatives in an apparent murder-suicide had been helping those relatives settle into the area after a recent move from India. Investigators did not have a motive for Devon Kalathat's rampage last Sunday night, which left 6 people dead and 1 critically injured at his home in an upscale neighborhood of Santa Clara, California. They were exploring the possibility of a family dispute. Do you remember that story and how horrifying it was? Well, I had to go back and do some research because the current news wires are full of all the other bloodshed that's happening in the country this week. Dateline Grand Prairie, Texas. Police say a 78-year-old woman was assaulted and set on fire in her Texas home by a man who may have gained access by saying he was selling magazines. The woman was recovering this Tuesday past at a Dallas hospital from second-degree burns from her chin to her stomach. Where was that? Not Baghdad. That was Grand Prairie, Texas. That's right. Dateline Boston, Massachusetts. 2 sisters and the brother who killed them with a kitchen knife will share a single funeral service. Shared a single funeral service and were buried together this week.
No.
Samantha Revelis, who was 17, her sister Bianca, who was 5, were killed in their Milton, Massachusetts home 2 Saturdays ago. Police shot the girl's brother, Kirby, after an officer saw him decapitate the 5-year-old. And their 9-year-old sister, if you remember, was also stabbed, but she is recovering at a Boston hospital. Do you remember these stories? They're coming fast and furious these days, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline Champaign, Illinois. 2 young boys missing for 3 weeks were found dead in the backseat of their father's car, apparently killed by their dad before he took his own life. A 911 call led authorities to a remote spot Sunday night where they found 9-year-old Duncan Connolly and his 7-year-old brother, Jack. And they discovered the body of 40-year-old father, Michael Connolly, about 60 yards away. The boys, from the small town of Leroy, Illinois, were the subject of a national search after their father failed to return them to their mother on March 8th following a weekend custody visit. The couple divorced in 2006. And we all, this is why it gets kind of depressing to do this show. We all heard the story out of Binghamton, New York. I've been to Binghamton. It's one of the prettiest little towns you'll ever come across in your lifetime. It's beautiful. And this guy, murderer, Wong, he shot 2 women immediately upon entering the American Civic Association. He killed 1 woman and wounded receptionist Shirley DeLucia. DeLucia played dead and called 911. She told the police there was a man with a gun and stayed on the line for 39 minutes before police were able to enter the building and pull her out. 39 minutes? Seems like an awful long time in Binghamton, New York. It's not a very big town. I'm sure all the police officers knew exactly where the American Civic Association was. But you know what the problem is, ladies and gentlemen? Is that the police are simply not the military. And they're not outfitted to deal with war in the streets. People breaking into, walking into buildings and opening up it's like a military assault. And the police are simply not outfitted to handle that. And so this guy Wong, and you know the leftist news media, they were all over this story initially because they were just hoping and praying that this was some disaffected white guy who had just lost his job and walked into this building full of immigrants and started shooting. But it turns out that this guy was one of them. And apparently he was mad at them. We don't know all the details. Some things will come out, I'm sure. The article says that he proceeded into a first-floor classroom, shooting all 15 people inside, killing 12 of them. Every victim in the room had multiple gunshot wounds. Police found him and his victims. And he killed himself inside the classroom. 33 people escaped the building unharmed, including 26 who barricaded themselves in a basement boiler room. Sounds like a terrorist attack to me. It sounds like these people were pretty terrified. But the terrorists that we all fear, the Muslim fundamentalists, it's not them that are exploding in our streets. It's us. It's our own people. And they haven't been educated into fanaticism by Muslim mullahs. They've been educated by the secular humanist culture that there is no God, that you evolved from the dirt, that you're just an animal, that there is no afterlife, and if you get mad at people, you can kill them all, and then if you want to get away with it, you can just kill yourself. Now, the secular humanist culture doesn't say that in so many words, but every day they reinforce that mindset, and this is the fruit. And there's a message in this article I read earlier in the week from the Binghamton University president, Lois DeFleur. Now, when I heard about this story, I was angry. I remember when I heard about Columbine. I was angry. I was angry that innocent people were slaughtered by a murderer and that our infrastructure, our police, weren't able to handle the situation. What I wanted was someone to stand up and tell me what was going to change. Define the problem, define the solution. How are we going to stop this from happening again? Why is this happening? Help me figure that out, and help me with a solution, and you should be angry about it. Because innocent people are being killed, and that should make you angry. If you don't know the people personally, you should be angry before you are sad. If you are sad before you are angry, you are a secular humanist wimp. You've been wimpified by the culture. You should be up in arms before you're sad. Now, it's okay to be sad, don't get me wrong. But if we don't get angry first, we're going to lose the war. Now, Lois DeFleur, the Binghamton University president, in the statement she released, she says, "The entire campus community is shocked by the tragedy that took place at the American Civic Association on Friday. We are all saddened by this tragedy and extend our deepest sympathy to the family, friends, and colleagues of the victims." Well, Ms. LaFleur, I'm angry. I'm not sad. And when public officials come out and make public pronouncements about a bloodbath that has occurred right before their eyes in their very own quaint little hometown, and they seem to not be angered at all, but they seem to be just paralyzed with sadness, I wonder, who are our leaders? And are they fit for the jobs that they have? It's quite disturbing to see. I have some other statements from residents and other people, and I find it hard to believe that no one expresses outrage and anger at the fact that these brutal, vicious murders are occurring at a rate so fast that we can barely keep track of them anymore in the public consciousness. Dateline Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, a domestic disturbance call ended in the deaths of 3 officers. I hate it when the news media reports stories like this. It's as if a call resulted in the deaths of 3 officers. And it wasn't the call, it was the murderer. The suspect's mother, Margaret Poplosky, called 911 to say that she had argued with her son after she discovered that a dog had urinated on the floor of the house. She told the police she wanted him removed. I don't know if she's talking about the dog or the son. I'm assuming she was talking about her son. Officers arrived at the home. Miss Poplosky told police as she opened the door, "Come and take him." And when they entered the home, he immediately shot and killed 2 of them, and then killed a 3rd a short time thereafter. The report quoted Miss Poplosky as saying her son, after being kicked out of the Marine Corps for assaulting his drill sergeant during basic training, had been stockpiling guns and ammunition, buying and selling the weapons online, because he believed that as a result of the economic collapse, the police were no longer able to protect society. The economic collapse? Forget about the economic collapse. due to the moral collapse, the police are no longer able to protect society. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney, and we still are in the midst of the domestic tranquility file. Dateline Dallas, Texas, a teenager who told police he wanted to be a serial killer was sentenced to life in prison Friday for wounding one person and shooting at another. Edward Mike G., 19-year-old punk out of Frisco, Texas, was convicted this Thursday past of attempted capital murder and deadly conduct in the random shootings at Brian Chevalier and Peter Reed back in 2006. Edward Mike G. was 16 at the time of the shootings. His mother testified that her family had a history of mental illness and that her son needed treatment. She told the judge that her son threatened to burn down the house when he was 10. And the article goes through a number of things that the mother said, and I'm wondering throughout the whole article, where is this kid's father? I asked myself the same question when I read the story about the murderer out in Pittsburgh who shot the police. Why was this guy's mother calling the police to remove a 22-year-old punk? Why didn't the father kick the punk out? Well, the answer is probably that the father is not around. Fathers are not really around much anymore. Dateline Albuquerque, New Mexico. In an unrelated story, police on Friday identified the remains of two more women among the several bodies found in a desert mass grave west of Albuquerque. Where was that? Where was that mass grave? Was that somewhere in the Balkans? Was it somewhere in the Middle East? No, it was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a mass grave, ladies and gentlemen. Police Chief Ray Schultz said the bodies of Monica Candelaria and Veronica Romero, both of Albuquerque, were the latest identified among the remains of 11 adult bodies and one fetus that were discovered in a mass grave in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The police have yet to identify a suspect. And Police Chief Schultz said his department will, quote, look at every possible direction, and we will follow every possible lead. Okay, well, we wish the police chief the best there, but that's not going to end well. All right. Now, let's move on to some cultural news. Dateline Washington, D.C. This was a fairly shocking headline. A Reuters story, a record 32.2 million people, one in every 10 Americans, received food stamps at the latest count, according to a government report released on Thursday. So 10% of the population is on food stamps. It's no wonder that we've elected a socialist Marxist into the White House, and that we continue to elect socialist Marxists into state, local, federal government. It's no wonder 10% of the people are outright on the dole on food stamps. I suppose I shouldn't have been too shocked by the story, but I remember once, my wife and I, now back in my younger days, I was a lot less responsible than I am right now. And my wife and I, just married and in the throes of young marital bliss, I had gotten us into a position where we were living in our car. And none of our friends would allow us to come over to their house anymore for a number of reasons that I won't get into. But we were running out of options. And so I went down to the government cheese office with my blushing bride sitting in our home, which was a 1990 Daihatsu Charade. And I went in and I started the process of applying for food stamps. And after answering about three questions on the government cheese form, I just went back out to the car and I said, "Sweetie, we'll go hunting or something. We'll do something. We are not going to get on food stamps." And you know, things started to look up shortly thereafter. I just couldn't do it. And the fact that 10% of the people in this country are willing to take the government cheese is just. Well, it doesn't bode well for the future of the nation. Let me just put it that way. And speaking of things that don't bode well for the future of the nation, a WorldNet Daily article this week, the internet dating service eHarmony, which has been distancing itself from its reported Christian foundations for years, now has launched a matching service for homosexuals. That's right. eHarmony. Now, let alone the fact that eHarmony itself, its own existence, pointed to the soon end and collapse of Western civilization. eHarmony alone was a harbinger of bad things to come. Now that they've launched a homosexual, what do you call it, a dating site? Do homosexuals date? I don't think they date. I don't think the relationships ever get that deep. I don't know. That's why I don't understand why they don't get married. I mean, well, why would you want to marry someone you met 15 minutes ago in a men's bathroom? I just don't get the thinking on that. That's why I think there's an ulterior motive to the whole homosexual marriage thing. But anyways, you'll remember that eHarmony was sued by a homosexual and a bunch of homosexual-loving lawyers. And eHarmony lost the suit. And the lawyers, the judge said, hey, eHarmony, Christian dating service, you have to provide a similar service to homosexuals, or, I don't know, we're going to shut you down. I'm not sure what the judge threatened them with. But frankly, myself, if I had a business enterprise that was successful, and the government came and said, well, you have to start serving homosexuals in the same way you serve heterosexuals, or we're going to shut you down, I would just hand them the keys, and I would go find another line of work. I mean, come on, the guys who started eHarmony, they must be fairly bright. They made millions of dollars. You'd think they could get into some business where they didn't have to grovel to the homosexual-loving government. But they decided, for reasons I cannot comprehend, to offer this dating hookup service to homosexuals. And it's just disturbing. That's all I want to say about that. Anyway, I'm running out of time, and I've got too many stories. Des Moines, Iowa. This is the other big news of the week. The Iowa State Supreme Court issued a unanimous ruling this Friday, finding that the state's same-sex marriage ban violates the constitutional rights of gay and lesbian couples. And by that, we don't mean happy people who live on the island of Lesbos. We mean homosexuals. That's right. Iowa is now the third state where homosexual marriage, quote-unquote, is now legal. Yeah. Des Moines attorney Dennis Johnson, who argued on behalf of the gay and lesbian couple, said, quote, this is a great day for civil rights in Iowa. We have to thank, we have all of you courageous plaintiffs to thank. Get married, live happily ever after, he said. Live happily ever after, and live the American dream. Was this the American dream? That we would have homos marching through the streets getting married?
Food stamps.
That's right. Food stamps are supposed to be the American dream. What are these people thinking about? All right. Now, last week we talked about the great smuggling opportunity to smuggle dish soap, I think it was, between Idaho and Eastern Washington State. Well, I just want to alert all you entrepreneurs out there of another wonderful smuggling opportunity. Dateline New York from the Associated Press. A suburban New York county has adopted the nation's first ban on the chemical found in plastic baby bottles and sippy cups. Yes. Suffolk County Executive Student Council Member Steve Levy, announced the ban last Thursday. Now, he's banned the Suffolk County elders have banned the chemical formerly known as biphenyl A, which is an agent used to harden plastic and to make it shatterproof, which is why it comes in so handy with baby bottles and sippy cups, because kids tend to drop their bottles and their sippy cups. And in the past, the glass would shatter, the kid would start bleeding, it would be horrible. But sippy cups and plastic bottles, well, they've revolutionized child rearing in general, because kids no longer drop their bottles and break the glass anymore. But the liberals will have none of that. They don't like kids. Let's see here. The chemical, by the way, bisphenol A, is also commonly used as a lining in food cans. It's also used in eyeglass lenses and hundreds of other household items. So if it's used as a lining in food cans, like your green beans, your cream corn, I mean, how dangerous can the stuff be? I hope it's not dangerous. And if it is dangerous, I guess they're going to be going after the cream corn and the buttered carrots here in the can pretty soon. Now, the Suffolk County ban will take effect within 90 days of being filed with New York's Secretary of State and applies to empty beverage containers used by children ages 3 and younger. The 4-year-olds, they have to fend for themselves. Hey, if your 4-year-old's still on a sippy cup, there's other issues, okay? You need to work with that kid. All right, Levy, again, the Suffolk County Executive Student Council member, said children's exposure to potentially harmful products should be minimized. Of all things parents must worry about, whether or not their child is being harmed by a baby bottle should not be one of them. And I happen to be in agreement with Mr. Levy on that. There are a number of other things that parents need to worry about with their kids these days. Most of them are the direct result of politicians not unlike Steve Levy, the executive student council executive there in Suffolk County, and other secular, humanist, liberal, socialist, Marxist, God-hating scum politicians who are running our country straight into hell. That's what the kiddies need to be worried about. Let's see now. Oh, this is an interesting story. I've observed this for many years. These payday loan places, okay? What's the deal with these payday loan places? They spring up everywhere. Every strip mall, every pad site, every retail area in town has a payday loan place. And I'm thinking, are there that many losers who can't make it to payday that they're willing to borrow money at 25% in order to get another 40 ounce of Cobra malt liquor? I don't know what's going on, okay? I just haven't been able to understand it. Well, listen to this. From Washington, D.C., the Associated Press, the payday loan industry, threatened by Congress with extinction, has deployed well-connected lobbyists and hefty sums of campaign cash to key lawmakers in order to save itself. The strategy has paid off. Now, a top Democrat who once tried to ban the practice is instead pushing to regulate it. A result, he says, of the industry's lobbying clout. Now, they don't name this politician, but it's amazing. Here's a politician who basically says, look, on moral grounds, I want to get rid of this industry, but man, they really came through with a lot of cash in the next election cycle, in the last election cycle, and, you know, I'm going to have to reconsider it. I think maybe we just need to regulate it. You know, and it reminds me of what Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry did with Jesse Jackson and other similar Southern Democrat-type politicians back in the 70s and the early 1980s. There were, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, there were a lot of pro-life Democrats who thought abortion was murder and that it should be illegal. But boy, I mean, Planned Parenthood really started coming across with the cash. And you know, in light of that, I think we need to reconsider, and perhaps abortion, the murdering of innocent children, merely needs to be regulated. So we shouldn't be too shocked by the idea that these politicians are being bought off by the payday loan industry when they've already been bought off by the child-killing industry. All right, so there you have it. I mean, that's where we are. Dateline Walla Walla, Washington. From the Associated Press, four people designated to administer lethal injections to death row inmates at the Washington State Penitentiary have resigned. Yes, they've resigned. Apparently, they were worried that their identities could become public in court because there's a lawsuit going on up in Seattle over whether or not lethal injection constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. And during the course of this lawsuit, the folks who actually administer the lethal injection, the good civil servants that they are, they're worried that their names and addresses are going to become publicized. And so they've resigned. Yeah. This lawsuit, now the execution team's resignations leave the state of Washington without personnel to perform lethal injections. And so I'm willing to volunteer my services right now. If there are any convicted murderers up there that the state of Washington is struggling trying to figure out how to kill them, I'd be happy. I'll even pay for my own airfare to come out and help you solve the situation. And I've got some friends. We've already discussed a number of options that would cost the state, well, they wouldn't cost as much as you're paying to put those drunks in that public housing. We could do it for cheaper than that. I'll tell you what, buy us one drink. And we'll take care of all of the guys on death row for you. You don't even have to give us a house. All right. Now, I'm not going to do the story about Obama controlling the banks. You all know what's going on there. Anyway, we're coming to the end here. We're running out of time, folks. Yeah. Dateline Washington, D.C., from the Associated Press. This is important, critical cultural news that the audience must know about. In an interview to air this week on the Tyra Banks show. Now, what are you laughing at? I told you this was important stuff. Okay, on an interview to air this week with talk show host Tyra Banks, Levi Johnston, the young gentleman who impregnated young Bristol Palin, we remember all that, right? No, we don't, actually, but I'm reading about it. I want to tell you about it. Okay. This young guy impregnated the daughter of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And then now he's gone on Tyra Banks' show for a big interview and an expose, and in which he says, I don't know, him and Bristol don't get along. They're not getting along. Apparently they're not together. It's Splitsville for Bristol and Levi. The two are the parents, unfortunately, of an infant son named Trip, which is kind of funny that they named him Trip, since they seem to be tripping over their ability to be responsible human beings. Johnston told the Associated Press back on March 11th that the couple had broken off their engagement. Yes. He said they needed time to grow up before following through on marriage plans. What are the odds of that? It seems to me they're pretty grown up. I mean, if he managed to impregnate her, that, you know, seems like they're pretty grown up. Anyway, you'll remember that Sarah Palin announced her daughter's pregnancy on September 1st, just days after Senator John McCain picked her to be his Republican vice presidential running mate. And the young lad even appeared at the Republican National Convention with the Palins, at which point I looked at the television and I said, surely this is the end of the Republican Party. Surely this is it. I mean, it ended for me about 10 years ago. But surely this is the low water mark of the Republican Party as it circles the drain on its way to the sewage pit of cultural irrelevance. Anyway, let's see here. Palin family spokeswoman Megan Stapleton said, quote, "We're disappointed that Levi and his family, in a quest for fame, attention, and fortune, are engaging in flat-out lies, gross exaggeration, and even distortion of their relationship." That kind of sounds like what Sarah Palin did out on the campaign trail with John McCain. Come on, lies, gross exaggerations, a distortion of their relationship. Anyways, all right. Is there any more stories that I deem worthy of doing? Oh, how much time do we have? Oh, only 1 minute. Mitt Romney, he's at work again, ladies and gentlemen. He's building toward a 2012 White House campaign. He's been out at fundraisers in Chicago, a fundraiser at the National Republican Senatorial Committee in Washington, the keynote speaker at a fundraising dinner for Republicans in New York. That's right. Mitt Romney is on a roll. He is going to be the nominee in 2012. And did you see the story on April Fool's Day? A related story. There was an April Fool's story from Car and Driver magazine that said that Obama had ordered Chevy and Dodge out of NASCAR. You remember that? Well, Ann Coulter fell for it, and she wrote in her blog all about it. She took it seriously. She said, if Obama can tell GM and Chrysler that their participation in NASCAR is an unnecessary expenditure, isn't having public schools force students to follow Muslim rituals, recite Islamic prayers, and plan jihad also an unnecessary expenditure? So the whole left blogosphere was laughing at Ann Coulter because she fell for this fake article. And folks, I gotta tell you, you gotta watch the Ann Coulter hang-ups video on YouTube, because that isn't the only fake article that Ann Coulter has fallen for. See Mitt Romney. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGov Radio. I want to thank my friends out at Personhood USA. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life and Denver Bible Church. And I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, for making it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. God bless you. May the grace of God go with you into this week. May his peace be upon you, and I will be back once again next week.